Hello again, and welcome back to The Gilded Thread. I'm Irene O'Brien, and this is the third episode of my six-part podcast series in which I'm chatting with my fabulous guests about their lives as recalled through their style memories. And I'm blooming loving it. Now, last week I spoke with my mama, Anne O'Brien, and so many of you contacted me to say you got a real kick out of our chat, which made me so happy and it tickled my mom no end. So thank you so much for taking the time to send those messages. It's so lovely to hear about the parts of these chats that resonate with you as a listener or remind you of different times from your own lives or those in your families. And thanks to those of you also that rated and reviewed the podcast. It is very much appreciated. Now, to this episode. You often hear people described as having infectious personalities, and I think that just perfectly sums up my experience of Olivia Tracy. As soon as she entered the room, there was sparkle in the atmosphere. Her positivity and her enthusiasm for every part of her life just shone through, and it made her a joy to speak with. We chat about her stylish family, how they shaped her love of fashion. This lady knew her mind early. We hear about how a lack of teaching jobs led to her taking the plunge into modelling, the path that brought her to Miss Ireland, the many, many exciting opportunities that followed, and ultimately led to her pursuing her acting dreams in LA. With her home in Ireland for an extended visit, we start off the chat talking about her favourite places in Dublin and the colourful memories spaces can hold. Well, Olivia Tracy, thank you so much for meeting me today
in the lovely
surrounds of the Radisson St Helens.
Isn't
here.
It beautiful? It's one of my favourite places.
Stunning, absolutely stunning. And I suppose you're coming back from LA all the time, so there are probably places that you think to yourself, I'm looking forward to having a little visit there, whether it's meeting someone, or do you have kind of hot spots in Dublin that you like to go to?
Yeah, I suppose I do. First of all, I love to come here because, first, I love the gardens.
Yes.
I find the staff very nice. I associated with my mom.
Yeah.
And I love that I can park.
Yes.
That's a big deal to me.
I know,
yes.
I know. And the practicality with the beautiful visuals.
I love it. And I suppose when I'm in town, I love to go into the Westbury because I have great memories of the Westbury. Years ago, they probably still do them, the afternoon teas.
Yes.
Yeah. And I used to model at the afternoon tea.
Oh, right.
Yes. And I used to have a great time. I modeled for various people. And, you know, it was supposed to go on for 2 hours. But with me, I think it went on for four because I'd stop and chat to everyone.
I was just about to say, well, you do know the chit-chatting. Because recently I was in, well, a couple of years ago, I was in Spain with friends and we were just sitting down having dinner. And next thing, these women came out. Now, they were in swimsuits, so it did take us a minute to realise they were modelling, because I thought, is there a pool outside? And then I realised they were holding the bags, and my friend was screaming laughing, going, did they just come around at dinner time? And I said, yeah, but my mum used to talk about that all the time, that people did that all the time.
It was lovely.
What a lovely way. I'd love to be watching a show with my afternoon tea.
Like, literally, and it was very relaxed. And I remember, oh my goodness, there was one embarrassing moment that happened. It was quite the moment. I was in the Westbury, and there was this gentleman that used to go in there a lot, and he was very much the dapper gentleman.
Yes.
And he'd sit down, he'd have his coffee, and I had this dress on me that was kind of sort of halter neck, but it didn't tie at the back of the neck. It was sort of that halter effect, and then it just went down, straight down the back. So if you didn't have something sticking it to your shoulders, it could easily slip off. But I had a little jacket over the shoulders, and I was chatting to him and this other lady, and the lady was like, oh, I like that. And I remember she was an English girl and she was like, oh, I'd love to see it without the jacket. And whatever, I slipped off the jacket and literally down came the dress off one shoulder and out popped the boob.
Oh, and had you considered that?
In the Royal Westbury Hotel. Oh, it was like, it was one of those moments. But anyway, I pulled myself together very quickly and everybody had a great laugh, including me, because what else can you do?
Of course.
And then I went back around in my next outfit the next time, which thankfully was a little more secure. And then the guy asked me out to lunch.
Oh my God. Did you go?
I did not. No, I did not. Oh my goodness. But it was just hilarious.
That
it was one of those moments.
Scream. Oh, that's the thing. You just have to laugh, don't you?
And I actually told that story on the Late Late Show one night, sitting beside Gay Byrne. And you won't believe this. A few days later, I was driving around Stephen's Green and I'm parked at the light. And the next thing across there on the side of the street, I see that gentleman
Stop!
Again. And he spotted me in the car and his face just lit up. And the two of us looked, one of them, he'd obviously seen the Late Late Show, and the two of us just laughed.
Oh my God, that's absolutely brilliant.
It was great. Yeah, it was
that
a great
is
story.
Absolutely brilliant. Oh. I imagine you have some fantastic memories from modelling. And I wanted to just start with, prior to any of that, when you were growing up, when did you first start noticing style or fashion? Who did you look to?
Oh, very early. I mean, even as a 3 and a 4 year old.
Really?
I can still remember there was a little, I'd say I was barely 3 actually. In fact, I might have even been 2 going on 3, that
wow.
kind of age. There was a little red velvet, gorgeous, pretty little dress that I never seemed to get to wear. And I remember I was fascinated by this dress and I was just dying to wear it. And I said to my mother one afternoon, can I put that dress on? So she let me put it on. And I know I was really small because I remember going down the stairs and I had to get up on my tippy toes to get the door open into the breakfast room. And I just pushed open the door. My father was sitting there in the armchair, and I just walked in and just stood there as if to say, look at me.
Ta-da.
Don't I just look the bomb in this red velvet? And he thought it was gorgeous. Don't you look lovely and whatever? And I got all the applause that I wanted from him. And that was kind of probably my first memory of fashion, of me being really aware of clothes and wanting to dress up nicely.
And the reaction that you can get.
And the reaction.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
Nice
I was
well.
Dying to get down that stairs. And I remember getting up on the tippy toes to open the door. But anyway, then, you know, from summers after that, I can always remember I used to always pray for sunny days, because if I got sunny days, then I could wear, I had a fascination with yellow, lemon and yellow were my favourite colour as a child. It was such a happy colour and I still love it.
Yeah.
And I remember being totally fascinated with this colour, and I had a few dresses. I had this aunt who was, she was an Auntie Annie, but because she was a nun, she was a matron in down in Killarney.
Yeah.
So she was known as Sister Oliver, or Mother Oliver, but we just ended up calling her Auntie Oliver, and my friends might give an Auntie Oliver, that's weird. But my Auntie Oliver was fabulous because she spoiled me rotten, and I really wasn't a spoiled child at all.
Yeah.
I was always taught that I worked for what I got, but she always gave me fabulous treats and she always bought me the best dresses, and they were always yellow. And I was always dying to have the sunny days so I could wear the yellow dresses. And I can still remember all the details of them. And one of them was like a little pinny dress. It was like yellow and white check, a small check, with a little pleating here in the centre. And there was a white blouse with puff sleeves that went underneath it with the cute little collar. And I remember my mother was a real stylish lady, and she got this little bit of brown velvet ribbon and she made it into a little bow, and she just pinned it to the centre of the whole thing, and the little bit of brown against the yellow and white popped beautifully. And I was only delighted when I could get to wear that dress. It was one of my favourite dresses. So I always loved sunny weather because I love dresses, and dresses and heels is really my thing.
Yeah.
So I love to be able to go out in warm weather with a dress and heels, a little bit of jewellery, the hair done, or even slick back in a pony, and you're done.
So really not that much has changed then in what
nothing,
you like from clothes and
what
you like
in
your bit of sunshine. So you mentioned there that your mom was very stylish, and she obviously had an eye. If she knew that she could create that bow and that would make such a difference to that piece, how did she dress?
Oh, my mother was elegance itself. She was just so elegant. My mother, first of all, her favourite colour were whites, creams, beiges and silvery greys and lilac. That soft lilacs and mauves.
Yeah.
They were definitely her colours. And like when she would put them on, I mean, they would just light up her face. She also had beautiful dark skin and green eyes that just sparkled. My friends all talk about, your mother has the sparkliest eyes. And she'd always be well groomed. The hair, God forbid, the wind would be blowing and the hair was taken out of place. But my mother was very much like, you know, I've loads of old photographs of her, and she'd always be in a beautiful dress with maybe the 3/4 sleeve in the 50s, or maybe the sleeveless. And because she tanned, she'd do great in like the little sun dresses.
Yes, yeah.
And everything was always very fitted and tailored and figured, and she was very slim and elegant. And that was very much a thing. I remember when we used to go down to my grandfather in Killarney, my father's father, they had very old fashioned ideas. As far as they were concerned, women do not wear pants or trousers. They
do
not.
Okay.
They wear skirts and dresses, and there'd be no women wearing trousers in this house. So my mother, she had these fabulous. Like they were like sort of a coral red little capri pant that was sort of just sort of above the ankle. And she'd wear them with a little sandal and a cute little blouse or top or something to go with them. She used to change into those when she got outside the house. So she'd get out of the dress or the skirt and slip shimmy her way in the back of the car into the little red.
When she's leaving the in-laws.
When she was leaving the in-laws.
That is gas. I've only heard that happen with teenagers going to discos when they get out of there.
Isn't it hilarious? So, but yeah, she was very stylish and she'd wear, do you remember the little, what do they call them, the little shrugs? She'd have those like over a really fitted little dress. But she wasn't as much of a dress person as I am. She loved tops and skirts, and she also loved mixing and matching and finding new outfits, which I also loved to do as well. So yes, I was definitely influenced by her. And I loved, you know, even thinking, you know, when I was seven and I wrote a letter to Santa Claus looking for, you won't believe this, a fur coat, a mini dress to go under it. This is the 60s, okay? And wet look boots.
Stop. When you were seven.
I was seven.
Oh and God, you sound like a character.
It's just unbelievable. And even in the letter I said, I'd ideally like the fur coat to be white, but it's okay if you give me black because that's more practical. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Oh my God, that's
But if you make it black, then, or if you make it white, then will you give me the dress underneath in black because they'd be nice together. And I don't mind which colour boots you give me. I was all about it. But I also had two older sisters.
Yes.
And my sister Anne, say when I was seven, she was 17. And my sister Helen was 6 years older than I, so I would have been, she would have been 13. And the two of them had two very different styles. Mm-hmm. Helen was as wild as a March hare, the 13-year-old, and she was all about the hot pants and the knee boots, the thigh boots over the knees, and they had the long... what would you call it? A waistcoat, but it wasn't the waist. It was like the maxi waistcoat over the hot pants. And she'd have the hair all split in the middle, straight down here, wisped into her face. And she looked the bomb.
Sounds amazing.
So I was influenced by her. And then Anne was always much more conservative and had a more elegant kind of style than Helen. Helen was kind of had the sexy style. And Anne would wear, I remember she used to go to these dress dances with her boyfriend and now husband, David. They've been together since they were 16 and 18.
Oh, wow.
And Anne just looked amazing. And they were usually on a Friday night. And I would just live for it because I know she was going to a dress dance that Friday. And I would be just all excited all week waiting to see what she was going to wear.
Like a spectator sport.
It was like a spectator sport. And I would be there, little seven-year-old, looking up at her. Oh. And this was in the day when they had, the women wore the hair pieces.
Yes.
The 60s. Yeah. I mean, it was a great look back then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was a fantastic look.
Oh, and it sounds magic. Imagine it being seven, loving style. Loving clothes, loving your sister, and then seeing them transform.
It was just, you know, amazing. But I was full of it. I literally was full of all of that. So I wrote my letter to Santa Claus. Did I get the fur coat, the mini dress, wet look boots, the whole thing? I got none of it. I got a doll.
Well, a doll that you could make those clothes for and put them on instead. I was thinking, I wonder, did she get it? Did she get one or two or three of the items? No, none of it. She got
items.
A doll. I'm sure they were thinking, yeah, we need to rein her in a little bit.
Oh,
bring her
I know, with her mini dress and her
mini
wet
dress
look boots.
Isn't that gasping? And when you were making your way through school then, do you remember the kind of things that you were wearing or interested in? Were you influenced by not only your sisters, did film or music influence you at all, or any magazines?
Oh yes, absolutely. Going back to when I was seven, mm-hmm. I had an absolute fascination with like all the bombshell actors, the stars of the mm-hmm. time. Raquel Welch, Sophia Loren, Ursula Andress, but particularly Raquel Welch and Sophia Loren. I just was like, now when I grow up, I really want to look like Raquel Welch. Mm-hmm. But actually now as I've gotten older, I am a huge fan of Sophia Loren. I just think she is just magnificent.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's got a very unusual, interesting beauty, you know, because it's almost unconventional.
Yes, it is.
You know, and it's like if you were to take apart some of her features, you'd say, it's okay, she has a slightly big nose, but it's gorgeous on her, mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. know, and but the eyes, the eyes, and the way she carries herself and the figure. And I love that she was married to the same man her whole life, and she has her kids, and she didn't get all caught up in the trivia of Hollywood, and that she kept her feet on the ground. Mm-hmm. She's somebody I admire hugely. And actually, I really admired her in that movie, and her style was fabulous. And again, it was the 60s. Mm-hmm. Arabesque.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That she did with Gregory Peck. Yeah. Oh, and when she walks into that room in that black long gown with the sheer chiffon sleeves just flowing and the hair all piled up on top and the eyes... Yeah. Just magnificent.
You could watch it with the sound down, just looking at her.
You could watch her with the sound down. And actually, I got to interview Gregory Peck when I used to write for the Sunday Independent. Yes. And I got to do a feature story with Gregory Peck in his house in Bel Air.
Wow.
And, you know, I was talking to him about, you know, Audrey Hepburn and Sophia Loren and all that. And he was great friends with both of them. And he says, oh, Sophia, he said, when it came to beauty, she was just it with a capital I. Yes, just stunning.
And you know, there's so much we can see in on film or in magazines, but when someone has met someone, you know, and they're saying she was it, and imagine all the people that he met as well. You know, it's obviously something really special.
She was.
And I'm interested to know the timelines, because I know you went to study French and English, is that correct?
French and English, yes.
To become a teacher.
Okay, that was the late 70s. So I went to UCD down the road here, 1978 to 1982. And I did my 3 years of English and French. And then I decided, you know, I'm going to do my HDIP to become a teacher. And let's just see what happens. There were really no jobs in Ireland at the time, and particularly in teaching, and most especially in the subjects I had chosen.
Yes.
But anyway, meanwhile, I used to work. My dad was an accountant.
Yes.
And he did the accounts for the store called Friends in Grafton Street. And it was spelled F-R-E-N-D-S. Mm-hmm. And that was the day. It was a really beautiful store, four stories, and the top floor had all the elegant stuff on the French floor. Anyway, I used to work there through my college years and in summers and Christmas holidays and on Saturdays. And when I finished college and had no job, I worked there for those few months. And in the process of that time, I was like, you know, I've always wanted to model. And if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. And one of the girls, Elaine Doody, Alison's sister, she had worked there too at one stage during the summer holidays. And I got to know her, and I knew that she was a booker in Brand Model Agency in Ely Place. And I thought, okay. And really, like, I'm somebody that's pretty outgoing and stuff, but there's also, like, back then, I wouldn't have had the confidence then that I would have now, because we get that as we do things in life. And I was like, a little wary about going to a model agency. I didn't know what I was going to walk into, and it was quite a frightening prospect to me. Yet I was dying and so excited to do it. So I thought, well, I can call Elaine. I know Elaine, and let's just start there and see what happens. So I said, Elaine, I'm interested in doing a bit of modelling. Oh, you should. That'd be great. Listen, dress up and come in and see me and stuff, and we'll take a few Polaroids of you and whatever. So anyway, I dressed up, and I still remember what I wore. I had this kind of, it was kind of like those beige camel-y colours. And the pants, the trousers were like that, the faux suede.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you'd wear them inside the kind of cowboy style boot. And the boots were kind of like a warm, rusty brown colour. And they had a little gold trim on them, I remember. And I wore those, and I had kind of a suede jacket that sort of matched the pants and a cream shirt underneath. And off I went in to meet her, and they took me on immediately. And then literally a few days later, I ended up doing my first fashion show for Switzer's, that was, which is now where Brown Thomas is.
Yes.
And it was a swimsuit show in Switzer's window in January 1983.
In January, what were they even doing with their swimsuits show in the window?
About it, it's like, we're now all getting ready for spring and whatever. Yes. Well, I'll tell you, it gathered quite an audience around that window.
Yes, as it would to this very day.
It was brilliant. We did four shows a day, and I was like, this is just so much fun. Why didn't I do this years ago?
Now, had you any reservations about getting into the swimsuit?
None whatsoever. I didn't mind at all.
No.
No, I didn't feel remotely.
And, did you wonder what would Mom or Dad say? No. You were sitting
not at
the
all.
Day.
My mother and father wouldn't have minded that at all. They thought it was all very exciting. They thought it was great fun. Yeah.
And you got the bug that very day.
Oh, I mean, I'd always had the bug ever since I was a child. Like,
but why is it then that you didn't pursue that earlier?
Because, well, when I was a child, I always wanted to be a model or an actress. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to be a teacher. And the other two things I thought I wanted to do when I was like about five, my father's still laughing in his grave, I'd say. I thought, well, maybe I want to be a nun. Never got to that one.
Was that because of sister
maybe
Oliver?
Maybe because of my sister Oliver, maybe. Yes. And then, and maybe I might want to be a maid. Oh, now, that really entertained him because it's just such a childlike thing to
yes,
do. Yeah, you want to be grown up housekeeping.
Yeah.
I thought it was like an exciting thing
get
to do.
It. Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I didn't do the maid thing. Although when I went to where was I? Cape Cod many years ago when I was a student, I went with my friend Anne Marie, and the two of us had to get a job for the summer, and we got a job as chambermaids in a motel. Well, 3 weeks was enough of that, and I thought, okay, I've gotten over that one.
Yeah.
On to the next.
Thanks.
Exactly. But anyway, I'd always wanted to get into the whole modelling thing, and I was always into fashion, and I loved looking through magazines and clothes and all of that, and bridal magazines and all the models and how they posed and the hairdos. And I suppose when I was in my teens, I'd love to have done it. And I remember I was probably 16, and I was at some disco as we went to back then. It was always a disco. And I think it was maybe in Stillorgan or something. And I went into the bathroom and I was all dressed up in this suit that was a Michael Jacobs pinstripe French navy, fitted like a glove, trouser suit. The jacket all fitted in at the waist and had the beautiful sort of curved
kind
hip on it.
Yeah.
And there was a waistcoat underneath it, and everything just really trim. And the pants, I was only like a size 8 at the time.
Were you a teenager?
I was a teenager. I was 16. And you're
such
thinking a pinstripe
style.
Suit. But
yeah.
That's what we wore back
yeah,
then. Like
yeah,
we
yeah.
wore things like that back
yeah.
then in the 70s. And I remember saving all my babysitting money for like about 2 years to buy this suit for myself. Anyway,
how satisfying when you get
I know,
but
I was
yeah.
just, I practically slept in it. Anyway, I wore it to the nightclub. Anyway, I was dancing the night away to all the disco music, and I went into the bathroom, and there was this gorgeous girl there with all this blonde, wild, tumbling hair, long, and she just had this style about her.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you have to be a model. And it was like, excuse me, I said, can I ask, are you a model? You must be a model. She says, yeah, I am. And she chatted and whatever, and I'm with Nan Morgan and whatever. And I said, oh, that must be so exciting. And she was very nice and very friendly. And she says, well, actually, she says, I'm getting out of it now. She says, I'm going on to do other things. She says, you should go down to Nan. And she says, if you want my stuff, here's my phone number. I'll give you all my accessories and everything. She was so nice.
Oh,
and
I wish I
could remember her name, because I just didn't keep her details at the time. But I remember thinking, oh, I'd love to do that. But I was terrified to do it at that age. Just the idea of getting on the bus and going into town on my own, and just like, and calling up Nan Morgan Agency to see if I could be a model. It was terrifying to
yes.
me. But then when I got to 22 and I'd gone through my years of college and I'm unemployed, and it's like, listen, girl, if you don't do it now, you're never going to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so you had the confidence, and the circumstance also kind of gave it the little kick along
the
way.
It sort of gave me the push. I was
yeah.
a little nervous about it. I still
Naturally.
Hadn't got quite the confidence. But it was so good for my confidence once I got into
really?
It.
Really? How so?
Because at first, okay, the swimsuit shows were really easy because you were in your bare feet and, you know, you were jumping into a swimsuit, and it was very easy to model it.
I should say, I absolutely love that not only was it a swimsuit that you first got into for your first ever job, it was in Switzer's window.
I know.
I mean, how iconic.
It's just great.
Yeah.
And I still have pictures from the newspaper from that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was just great. But anyway, but then when you'd start doing other fashion shows where you have to be up on a big runway in a huge room in
mm-hmm.
some like the Jury's Hotel
mm-hmm.
or something, and you have to wear these clothes and maybe take off the jacket and you're in heels and maybe they have you in a pair of court shoes that might be a half size too big and you're terrified
yes.
you're going to slip out of them, that was nerve-wracking.
And how soon had you started doing the shows after that first Switzer's?
I probably was within the first year of modeling,
okay,
and
yeah.
I really remember it being terrifying. But Brand Model Agency saw me more as an advertising model rather than a fashion model. But I was very much the swimsuit girl, the workout girl,
mm-hmm.
Anything to do with workout and
fitness,
anything to do with that. Or health products, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was like the wholesome girl next door
mm-hmm.
who was fit and outdoorsy. And
well, you must have exuded that then. You know,
that was kind of what my look was, I suppose. And I had all the hair done with all the layers and the Farrah Fawcett thing back
yes.
then. You know how it was. So anyway, I loved doing swimsuits. People would kind of think, God, are you not nervous getting into swimsuits? That was actually the thing I felt most confident
really?
In.
Really?
Swimsuits and underwear was my thing. It
yeah.
was just so easy.
Yeah.
But anyway, I remember I used to do the afternoon shows for the tourists in Brown Thomas.
Oh, yes.
Catherine Condell used to hire me for that.
Okay.
I mean, all the way back in the day in the 70s, late 70s. Or no, early 80s it was, 82, 83. And even that was nerve-wracking because it was again like this, it was a smaller session where they'd have maybe a part of the store and they'd have all of these seats set up and you'd come out, you know, from the side and you'd have this small little runway and it was like on the carpet in front of all these people. But I was as close to them as I am to
yes,
you now. So at least it was nice that I had a bit of a personality and I was sort of smiley and I'd be friendly to people. So that sort of made it feel a little more, I was more at ease with that.
Yes.
But it was still nerve-wracking to me to do this little show live. I remember I used to break out in this nervous rash on my neck and chest and it was like, oh God, this is
just what you need before you go out modelling.
That's what you need when you go out. But you know something, you do it 1 week and then you do it a second week and a third week and then it got to the point where you do it in your sleep and it was so lovely to feel that ease. And
like, you start enjoying it.
You start really enjoying it. And then I used to love doing runway then after that. It was one of the things I loved doing and going on the bus with all the girls down to do all the country shows and we'd be meeting and we'd be on that bus at 7 and 8 in the morning. And I remember I used to have the hair in rollers.
Course,
I'd have the scarf over the head and I'd keep the rollers in for the day so that I'd have the big hair that night. But anyway, it was really exciting.
How soon after you started modelling did Miss Ireland even come into your conscience? When did you hear about it?
Listen, Miss Ireland was in my conscience since age 7.
Really? Yes. I love 7-year-old Olivia. She's just the crack now. She was a very determined little girl.
7 was definitely the magic thing. But anyway, so age 7 was a big year for me. I kind of, my whole personality developed and I started becoming much more outgoing and getting a little more giddy and giggly and having fun with my school friends and all that kind of thing. And then I used to watch the Miss World. Like the Miss World was like, it was always on a Thursday night and it was a big night and we would all get around our chairs, sitting down in front of the TV. And I was full of it and I used to just love all the girls coming out. And
watching it with your family?
Watching it with my family. My mother was into it too. We were all into it.
Yeah.
Everybody was into it. We would all watch it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, wouldn't I just love to be up there someday? Little did I think I would be. I mean, it was unbelievable that that all happened.
Yeah.
And so when I was modelling then, to fast forward on that, I was modelling and actually, just before I started modelling, I actually modelled for Misha Lamber.
Amber.
I did a week for them. They had their market week or whatever in Jury's Hotel. And I got to meet loads of other models. And this was actually before I actually officially started modelling because I was actually still at college. I was doing my HDIP at the time. And I met loads of models that year, at that time. And they were all really friendly and nice. And, you know, they were just full of chat. And a few of them had entered the Miss Ireland. And one or two of them had gotten second and third in the Miss Ireland. And this all kind of encouraged me and gave me the confidence to do it. So anyway, I started modelling the following year. And then within a year and a half of modelling, I decided my brother opened the newspaper, Ciarán. He opened the newspaper and he says, oh, Olivia, I see an ad here. Tonight is the last night to enter the Miss Ireland. They're going to close off the thing on it. So I'm like, oh, wow. So anyway, I decided to go off down to the nightclub, which was, I think it was Barbarella's at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Off I went down to Barbarella's. And I entered the Miss Ireland that night and I got through. And then you had to go a few weeks later to Rumours nightclub down in the Gresham Hotel. And I got through that. And then I was into the finals. And then eventually the final took place at the end of August. And I won and I was number 12. 12 was my other lucky number. And Mike Murphy and Maxie were the co-hosts.
Oh, wow.
And both of them were just fantastic. Both had a great personality. They were real warm and friendly and you felt totally comfortable with them. And I remember when it was like, okay, on Miss Ireland 1984, number 12, Olivia Tracy. And I remember coming out on the stage and Mike picking me up in the air and spinning me around on the stage. And then, of course, I ended up working with them the year following year on Murphy's Magnetism. And I stayed in touch with Maxie as well. And I used to see Maxie at loads of different events and stuff. She was always a lovely girl.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, they were great.
She's an Irene as well.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. She's originally an Irene.
Yes, she is.
Yes, yes. So, you know that night when you went to the first nightclub? I mean, it was just, you saw your brother saw the ad.
Yes.
And said, it's closing this night. Like, was there any butterflies or was there no time for that? Did you just get your gear and kind of go ahead?
It wasn't really. My boyfriend at the time, Peter, he was like, he encouraged me to do it, actually, yeah. because he called me up and we were going to get together that night. And I said, listen, I said, Kieran just mentioned that tonight is the last night for the Miss Ireland. I said, I just really don't feel in the mood now to get all dressed up and go down there. Ah, he said, go on, you should. Go on, put on something nice and a bit of makeup and I'll pick you up and I'll bring you down. So bless him. So anyway, I thought, okay, grand. So I got into a Michael Mortel suede mini dress.
I was just about to ask you what you wore. Yes. I love that you can remember.
And actually, I think it was officially a long tunic that should probably be worn over like jeans or leggings or something. Yeah. But at the time, it was shown in a magazine on a fabulous Swedish model called, I think her name was Carlotta or Charlotta, some name like that. Okay. And she was magnificent. And it was shown in beige, but I actually bought it in black. And I wore a hip belt, like a loose hip belt with it, and little black boots that sort of came up a little above your ankle kind of thing, but they were sort of the ones that
slouched again.
They slouched, the slouchy ones, so they made your ankles look even thinner.
Yes.
And that is what I wore, and my hair was all layered and I had it all fluffy kind of thing. And I was just back from Ibiza and I was like bronzed from the sun. And that's what I wore and I got through. And then the next time I went down to the nightclub, I had a pair of tan leather shorts.
Oh, wow. And your wardrobe sounds amazing.
Oh, my God. And a black linen top that was sort of cut away here at the shoulders. And and the little black boots, the same little black boots. And then the night I won, I wore, it was like a sort of a royal blue bordering on navy blue evening gown. And it was just simple little straps and it had that sort of ruched effect all the way down to the knee and then it went out in a kind of a fishtail.
Yeah. Did you feel great?
I felt fantastic. Yeah, I was delighted with this dress and I was really enjoying the whole process and all the girls in the competition were great. We were all having great fun in the process. Yeah. And, you know, we all really enjoyed it. And it was just so exciting to be part of this.
Oh my God, of course. Funny, I was speaking to my mom about you earlier today when I was on the phone to her. And she said, you know, she said, Olivia Tracy really, she's one of the few Miss Irelands I could name. And she said she epitomised it, you know. And
that's very nice.
She and her sisters would have all known you and that you were very much, very well known. And I'm wondering, was that instantaneous with when you became Miss Ireland? Did things change straight away?
Immediately.
Really?
I got home at the small hours of the morning. I probably got into bed, I'd say 3 o'clock in the morning or maybe after it. And I remember the phone going at 7 a.m., the press calling, can we come over and do interviews with you? Can we have you having your first breakfast at home? And what actually caused a lot of this was the fact that splashed all over the papers, graduate wins Miss Ireland. Like, that was such an unusual thing at the time.
Okay.
Because a lot of people that would go into Miss Ireland would have maybe come out of school, maybe they did a commercial course, they went into some other business, or maybe they went into modelling and just naturally gravitated into Miss Ireland and didn't necessarily go to college, or maybe they did years later, but not then.
So this was a new angle.
This was a whole new angle. And this was like something totally fresh and new. And it was like, oh, we have brains and beauty together. But, you know, that didn't mean that the girls who did it before me didn't have the brains.
I know, of course.
Just because they didn't go to college. Yes, many of them did.
Yeah.
But anyway, it caused a big stir and they were showing up and I just was like, yeah, of course, come on over. And I remember getting into a little, it was like a sort of a lilac pink little jumpsuit because the jumpsuits were all the rage at the time, and it was a little jumpsuit and it was cute and because it sort of would have just fitted well to sort of not be too dressed up over your breakfast and stuff. And I mean,
I love that not too dressed up is
not
a little
too
pink.
Dressed
it's
up.
A little purple jumpsuit. Welcome to Olivia's world.
Oh God, you still had to look respectable.
Yes,
really. But anyway, it was great.
Where were you living at that time?
In Greenview Road, the house in Greenview Road. Yeah. And of our family home. And
what did they make of it?
Oh, I mean, my parents, it's just so funny. The night I won, my girlfriends from school, Anne Marie, Marion, and Brona, were sitting behind my mother and father.
Oh, right.
And all my family, and my Auntie Pat. And my Auntie Pat was definitely one of these people. She had a big laugh. When she laughed, the world would laugh with her. She was definitely out there, big personality. My mother and father would be definitely more reserved. Anyway, when I was announced as the winner, my mother and father just sat in the seats, dumbfounded, like
in shock.
This is just like unbelievable. My Auntie Pat jumped out of her seat, let a big roar out of her, as did my three girlfriends behind my father and mother. And my father loves talking about that. Jesus, when I heard the big yell from the three schoolgirls behind. It was great. It's a brilliant memory.
Yeah.
But anyway, my parents were just overjoyed by the whole thing. And it was just like this amazing, like, huge excitement in the house.
And did the TV work? Because I know so much came quite soon after that, didn't it?
Yes.
Was that, did you have it in your head that that was something you definitely wanted to do? Or did doors just open for you and opportunities arise?
Well, I tell you, it was actually something I felt that I wanted to do out of the modelling and the Miss Ireland. Because all of a sudden I found myself out on the Derek Davis show.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was my first show after winning the Miss Ireland as his guest. And I really liked the whole thing. And I loved being in the TV studios. And I thought, God, that'd be something I'd really like. And I think I'd love to interview people and do all that. I think it'd be something that I would love. So I mentioned that on one of the shows. And then I was invited to be, like, straight after that show, literally, I was invited to go on as a continuity announcer. We'll give you a job as a continuity announcer.
Yeah, and there, that was in the days when continuity announcers, you could see them on
you
screen
could see
as
them
well.
On screen.
Yeah,
and so
that was basically my dream.
Really?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So
I used to see you doing
that.
Announcers, and I was like, I loved it. And I didn't really know where that chair and table went the rest of the time, but I loved it. I thought it was incredibly glamorous. I thought there was, you all had such poise and so eloquent and kind of cheeky smile. And there were, I always thought, even at a young age, there's a lot to that.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And
I'd say you'd be great at it. But anyway, so I did that. And in the course of that year, my Miss Ireland came to the end, say, in 1985. And so meanwhile, I'd gotten on doing some continuity announcing in that time. And then I got a call to be the host on Murphy's Micro Quizzen.
So I'm fascinated by this.
Yes.
I think, firstly, you know when you just say, I got a call. Was it just like that? It was just like that. It was out of the blue. You hadn't heard about the show starting and you didn't know anything.
You know, the ironic thing was that I had seen the show and I had actually, years ago, when they started doing the show first, they were looking for, hosts, three hostesses for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually, I think, away on holidays when they were looking for people for the show. And when I came back the next day, Geraldine said to me, Olivia, you would have been great for this. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to write to the producer. And I actually found those letters afterwards in my mother's house. The letter I had written to the producer saying, I'm really interested in this. And if you haven't chosen your person, I know you were interviewing and I was out of the country, but I would love to interview for this if you are still seeing people.
And did you never send it?
I did send it, but
you
had a copy.
You had a copy.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
So anyway, so it didn't happen at the time. They picked three different girls to be hostesses of this show, and then
but it was on your radar then.
Yes. Yeah. So 3 years later, or 4 years later, whatever it was, I ended up then getting. Or it was only a year later, maybe. Yeah, it was a year later. I ended up becoming the host of the show, the single host, along with.
The format had changed on the show.
Yes, they originally thought, let's just have somebody do a voiceover, it would be much better. So then I went in and I met with the producer and everything. He says, listen, he says, we're not going to hide you, let's just put you on the camera. And I thought, that's great. So then I'd, of course, had an opportunity to dress up every week.
Yes.
And there were all the Irish manufacturers were just great, and they were all like, Olivia, we give you something to wear this week. And they got a plug on the TV.
Brilliant.
And everyone was happy.
Yeah.
So it was a very, very nice experience, I have to say. And the whole thing just took off. I just kind of took to it like duck to water, really. I did Murphy's Micro Quizzen for 2 years, from up to about 87, I think that was. And then I started getting interested in acting.
Okay.
And I went to the Gaiety School of Acting for the summer and did their summer course, their 3 month course. And then when that finished, a few months later, or even a month later, Joe Dowling called me up and invited me into the Gaiety to audition for the role of Cinderella in the pantomime.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And this is how I interpreted that. I thought, how nice of Joe to invite me in to audition. He's giving me the opportunity to audition. Never entered my head that he was going to give me the part. I just thought he was giving me a bit of experience at auditioning.
Yeah,
That's the way I saw it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I had to sing for this. So I thought, I'll sing You've Got a Friend, because I knew the words.
Oh, yeah.
And it was something that I was comfortable with. So I went off into the audition, not knowing, I mean, I was so green, not knowing I was supposed to bring my music sheet with me.
Oh, right.
Because I had no idea.
How would you know if you'd never
done it before?
I hadn't
done any singing classes or anything. So anyway, there was another girl there and she says, what, you haven't brought your music sheet with you? And then I thought, don't let this throw you off. And I remember going out to the guy on the piano. I said, I think his name was Joe. I said, listen, Joe, I said, I haven't got any music. I didn't bring any music for you. Well, love, don't worry. What are you singing? And I said, I'm singing You've Got a Friend. Ah, sure, I know that.
Ah, and it was grand. Lovely.
So he
fair play to you for going and making that, having that human connection and just saying to someone, appealing to their better nature, isn't it?
It was like, but I panicked for a moment. It was you know, the feeling of like, oh my God, I haven't got what I'm supposed to have.
Yeah. And I'm going to be found out.
I know. Yeah. I'm going to be found out. So anyway, off I went out on the stage and it was my first time to sing on a microphone. And it was just, it was kind of nerve wracking, really, on this enormous gaiety stage. Anyway, I just went out and the pianist really did help me to feel calm. She says, don't worry, Mrs. Grant, I know that song. Off you go on your own time. And anyway, I just stood there and I started singing. And then I could hear the voice echoing back at me through the whole place. And in my head, it was like, God, it doesn't sound too bad if I saw myself.
Yeah.
So that kind
of
encouraged me.
Yeah.
And I got through the whole thing. And then Joe came up and he said, that's great, Olivia. Thanks very much. Brilliant. And I went off about my business. And then I got a call. I can't remember if it was later that evening, because I think it was a Friday. It was either the Friday or the Monday that I got a call to say, Olivia, we'd like to offer you the part of Cinderella.
Wow.
And I just could not believe it. It was like I won Miss Ireland all over again.
Well, I just have seen your face and your eyes lit up and your smile went across your face. And I just thought, I could just picture it. You were probably ready to burst.
I was ready to burst.
Yeah.
And the first person I called was my father.
Aww.
And I called him in the office. I said, Daddy, I said, you won't believe it. I said, they gave me the role. I got the part. And he was on the other end of the phone. He says, God, he says, there's no doubt about it. You're just a bloody great kid.
Ah, what a memory.
And I still remember he was just over the moon. And my family were over the moon.
Of course. Well, I was just about to say, you kept on giving them things to be proud of. And
and
that they were kind of able to share with you. Because many people's work, you know, we don't see them do it, you know. So
and they got to
celebrate
part of that. Yeah, it was really fun.
And how were the nerves on opening night? Did they... were they anything on the level of how nervous you used to feel doing your walks? Was it similar or was it very different?
No, it was different. I suppose the opening night, you do a preview and that is definitely nerve-wracking because, you know, you have all the lines to learn, you have the songs to know, and there was a song and dance number. But I don't remember being frazzled. I wasn't frazzled with nerves.
Yeah.
But then again, remember, at that point I was like 27 or thereabouts, maybe 20. I was 28.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose when you think about it, I had been modelling since I was 22. So I had 23. So I had about 5 years of all of that behind me, runways and everything, which was
a lot of live work.
A lot of live work and hosting on TV and stuff.
Yeah.
So all of that builds your confidence. Mm. And I was also used to writing my own scripts for television stuff as well and hosting gigs. So I had had a lot of experience there with all of that. Acting was definitely a new vein for me.
Yeah.
But definitely the nerves. Yeah, you're always nervous on opening night.
Yes.
Even years later, you would be. But it was contained. I was okay with it.
And was it a new feeling of excitement inside you?
Oh, it was like used to come off the stage every night after that show. And I was like, I have found what I want to do forever.
Oh, incredible.
It was fantastic.
And from that experience, you thought, it's acting.
Oh, I was totally smitten by the acting. That was really my thing. But I still loved modelling, but I knew I had to cut back on it because it's sort of all about perception, how people see you. Are you a model or are you an actress? You can't be both.
Well, I was just
about
to ask.
You can.
Of course you can.
They didn't see it that way.
You know, because I was thinking about you and I was thinking you're one of the original kind of hyphenate. You know, everyone says it now. We're all like, I'm a stylist and I'm a writer and I'm a blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And people think it's a new phenomenon. I mean, not at all. You know?
Because really, when you're in the creative world, you very often have a talent and an interest in various directions of that.
Yeah.
So why not do it all? And sometimes one feeds the other.
And was it because there was a perceived snobbery, or you thought that they were going to perceive you in a certain way, other actors? Is that why you were nervous of that? Or you just wanted to focus on acting?
It's really the way the producers and directors, the people who would hire you, is the way they would perceive you. And, you know, it was like you had to be, you know, the serious actor kind of thing. So there was sort of this, you can't be a model and be an actress as well. They just don't go hand in hand.
But which is gas.
Really, it's why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, you know, you could be doing a modelling show one day and you could be doing a part on a TV series the next day or the next week. And why not? Why can't you do both? Why not?
Yeah.
It was just really people, it was the way people saw it at the time. So I kind of really had to fight to break that mould.
Mm.
So I remember my first show actually was in the Project Art Centre in this little theatre. It was a very artsy piece. And Vlad Dracula, the Impaler, was the name of the show. And it was very out there, artsy. But anyway, and I remember working for £70 a week there.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, you were really just doing it for the parking money, really.
Yeah.
But I did it because I was wanting to prove myself. And it was a job that I was offered and I was taking it.
And did that pay off? For that, did that lead to other
gigs?
Yes,
it did. I ended up then going on to, God, from Cinderella to Lady Chatterley.
Right.
And Lady Chatterley really put me on the map. And Angus Fanning, Lord Restham, he was the editor of the Sunday Independent. That man had me in the paper every week in the Sunday Indo. And we had literally cancellation queues outside the doors for the show. We went all over the country with it. We went to the Olympia with it. We were in Andrews Lane Theatres where we started. And actually the reviews when they came out first were not great. They were a little, you know, they were very mixed, we'd say, mixed reviews. But anyway, the whole show took off and it was going a year and a half later.
Stop, were you doing it a year and a half later?
Yes.
Oh my God, that's like all your dreams come true, isn't it?
Could have gone on forever, could have gone on for years.
And how important was your profile in that? You know, when you were saying, God bless him, he was writing about me all the time in the papers. Like, were you aware that you needed to try and keep your profile out there to continue getting work?
Not really, because it just was happening.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things that it just sort of happened from Miss Ireland.
Yeah.
It all just
you
came to me.
You didn't have to court it. It was
I didn't have to. It just all came to me. And so I wasn't necessarily aware, oh, I have to keep my profile going.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back, I now see how great it was.
Yes.
But I think I just took it as part of, this is just part of what I do, and journalists call you up and they interview you and it just happens.
How important was your image around that time?
Oh, it was definitely a big shift for me to delve into this whole Lady Chatterley thing, because I was really kind of the girl next door.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I'm this femme fatale, and is Olivia going to take her clothes off for this show? Well, she didn't. He did. I didn't.
Okay.
I was the one that stayed in
well
the little
arranged.
Silk slip and left a little to the imagination. So it was kind of, and actually, I think it was kind of interesting as well, because in this day and age of women's lib, it was interesting that the woman didn't, but the man did.
Yes,
so it was kind of smart of them to do it that way. But anyway, it was definitely, it took a lot of courage for me to do that joke. It was like, am I really willing to go out on this limb? But anyway, I did. And then I really wanted to go to the States. I had always wanted to go to the States, really, ever since I was a child.
Mm.
Maybe not quite 7, but 8, 9, 10. I was kind of like watching all these TV shows and I'm like, oh God, I'd love to go there. I'd love to live there.
Yeah.
And it sort of always stayed with me. So
did you find it appealing, like a shiny place? You know, did you think it was glam?
I used to watch Dallas and I just wanted to be on Dallas. And I just thought I'd go to America and it would just all happen the way it happened in Ireland, where you would go on a TV show and you'd be interviewed and you'd say, yes, I'd love to be on this show, and then all of a sudden you'd be just offered it.
Yeah.
So it didn't quite happen like that in America. You really have to work the grind.
Mm-hmm. And are you over there, are you working predominantly as an actress?
I am working in a mix of things. I work as an actress, I work as a model, and I also work as a spokesperson for Kia, the car company.
Oh, very good.
And they send me to different cities where I would be on a turntable with the car beside me, and I'd be talking about the car and going about all the horsepower and the torque and the ISG idle stop and go.
Well, also, you probably had great great experience from all those years before with Mike Murphy's show.
Murphy.
We were talking about
exactly.
all of the gifts and stuff as well.
So that's fun.
It really struck me, and I know we've been chatting far too long now. I know we need to rip it up, but it really struck me that there are people I know, and I know myself, there are kind of dreams that we have and ambitions that we have, and you could spend your whole life focusing on them. And a lot of them, they're kind of the glamorous or the exciting careers, and one might be model, one might be actress, one might be
TV
pageant
host.
One
yes.
might be TV host, one might be fashion editor. I know we haven't
yes.
even spoken about that, but you did do a lot
I
of writing.
I did that for Woman's Way magazine.
I
was a writer, I wrote for them, and I used to coordinate all the clothes for the shoots and stuff. And then I also wrote for the Sunday Independent, and that's how I actually got into America, really, by getting a writer's visa for the year.
Right,
so
okay.
again, thank you, Angus Fanning. Then when I got to America, I had a column. I went into the Irish Echo newspaper and introduced myself. And Claire Grimes, most wonderful lady, she ran the newspaper, and she was like, "That's fantastic. We would love to have you. I'm going to give you your own column." And she says, "We need somebody like you, and get you out into all the social events around New York, all the Irish events,
Olivia,
whatever." And
okay.
it was, I mean, did I make a lot of money on it? No,
no.
But it's so much
Who cares?
Fun. I met fabulous people. I just had a great life. I was invited to all, like, the Irish Rep Theatre, the Irish Art Centre. They'd invite me to their opening nights. And then I actually ended up getting an acting job in the Irish Art Centre, which was my first acting job in America.
Oh, wow.
In a play, yeah. So that was great, yeah.
But Olivia, even the way you say that, you know, and I went in, and then I chatted to them, and then I got this, and you had your own column, and all of these things that people would aspire to. You have lived so many lives career-wise, and you make it sound like loads of doors open. I know from talking
yes.
to you now that you're a grafter, and obviously
yeah.
you've worked. But what is it about you that you have been able to find success in all of these elusive careers that so many people chase?
God, that's very nice of you to say that. I think that one thing sort of led to the other. And I remember reading a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Oh, yes.
And I actually ended up interviewing the writer of that book many years later. And I told her that her book literally changed my life, because
okay.
I ended up, when that happened, I remember reading that book, and it was like, you know something? You came out of college, university, no job. You went into acting, or I went into modelling. And it was one of those things where you wanted to do it at 16, and then you got to 22, and it's like, okay, Olivia, if you don't do this now, you'll never do it. Then I'm like 32, 33, Olivia, you've always wanted to go to America. If you don't do it now, you'll never do it. Look, you made the step to go into modelling, and look at all the wonderful things that happened along the way. Modelling, Miss Ireland, acting, writing, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
Just make that step and just take it and move forward. And I suppose the fact that I had the Miss Ireland behind me was a great gift to me when I went to America. It was definitely an asset, because they loved the idea that they had Miss Ireland, former
yes.
Miss Ireland, writing for the newspaper. And loads of Irish American people and Irish people living in America would have apparently known of me, and I didn't know that.
Okay.
And so you'd get invited to these things. So I had this following in America that I actually never knew about until I got there.
Well, how brilliant that then you went and did it and found
that
out.
It was
great.
It was really great. And I think I'm a people person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think somehow things come to me maybe because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But not everything comes to you because of that. And sometimes people love you, but they don't have the right job for you, and they can't give you the job at the time.
Mm.
Or maybe they want to give you the part, but, you know, they've got, you know, Susan Sarandon, who's going to take the part, and she's going to bring in all the
yes,
money for the
of
movie
course.
Or whatever, you know. So you don't get everything.
No,
but
you don't get everything. And obviously, you know, you have really, you saw the power of confidence. And I feel like, you know, you've really channeled that then through so many careers. I'm just going to bring you back. You were talking about that book. At what stage did you read that book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway?
The end of 92. Because then that gave me the courage. It was November 92, I remember. November 92, I read that book. And in March 93, I moved to London.
Okay.
And I spent 8 months in London, and I didn't like London, but I did share a house with an absolutely wonderful woman who had two kids and three cats, and she rented rooms in her house. And one of the girls that lives in that house, Harriet, ended up marrying an Irish man. I'm still friends with her to this day.
Stop.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes. But that was the happy part of London.
Yeah.
That household was great. But I lived in London for 8 months, and then from London, it was like, okay, put my toe in the water moving out of Ireland. I am now ready to take the move to go to New York. And then I went into Angus Fanning and I got this writer's visa for a year. So now I can go to America for the year and write. And I can write for him. And I also went in to visit. I went on a pre-visit to visit a few newspapers in New York. And then I got this gig with the Irish Echo. So I was writing for the two newspapers. And then I started back into modelling in New York. And then I could do my acting as well. And I got the part in the Irish Arts Centre doing the play.
Fabulous.
So then I became a member of American Equity then.
Yeah.
And then I went out to LA to cover the Oscars for the newspaper for the Sunday Independent. And I also wrote about it as well for the Irish Echo. And, it was March. And I'm walking down Rodeo Drive and it's 75 degrees and the sun is shining, the sky is blue. And I'm like, I could definitely live with this.
Yeah.
So I had the bug and I was back in New York. And I remember I had a boyfriend at the time and we got engaged. And I was like, oh, God, am I really going to go through with this or am I going to go to L.A.? Now, if he had moved to L.A. with me, maybe I would have been fine. But yeah. I wanted to go to L.A. and he was definitely somebody who wanted to stay in New York. So I took off on my single travels and off I went to L.A. in 1997. So I was 3 years exactly in New York and I loved New York. I had a ball. So I went there knowing no one bar a friend of a friend who I had met one night. She said, if you want to stay with me for a few weeks, she said, while you get yourself set up, you can.
Yeah.
So I did. And then I got my own apartment and stuff and so on. But it's like I had 40 names of friends of friends on a piece of paper with their phone numbers. But I remember Jim Sheridan gave me a name of a friend, Caroline Kerrigan. He says, yeah, she's a very nice girl. She used to work with me in the Irish Arts Centre. I think the two of you would get along. So anyway, I took her number and I called her and she'd love to meet you. And we're still friends to this day.
Wow.
If people were listening to this and if they were saying, oh God, I'd really love to go away and do something like that. And it is daunting at the thought of doing it. But you find that you just do it. You get there and you know a few people. And also if you're Irish and you arrive in LA or New York or any part of the world, Irish people, and I am, I'm very open to helping people when they come. Because we all remember what it was like.
Yes.
And then, but when other Irish people are coming over, I'm like, look, you should come along to this event. And you meet, they make loads of friends.
Yes.
And they feel part of that community.
Yeah.
And we always
so
have a great
important.
Time.
And just with regard to the modelling and the acting in LA, how does that differ from doing it here or in New York or anything? I mean, because your modelling career, did it have a second chapter? Did it take off again? Or has it been consistent the whole time?
Yeah, it had a whole second chapter. I ended up being with Ford Model Agency for over 10 years.
Wow.
And when I was like in my 20s, Ford wouldn't take me on because I'm too old.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, no, you're too old. Like I wasn't 16.
Okay.
So anyway,
in a few years.
It was great. I know, it was just great. And they took me on. I was with them for over 10 years. And it all happened really when my hair turned this natural silver colour grey.
But of course, I have to talk about your hair. You mentioned it earlier as well. And it is, to me, everyone mentions your hair and everyone says it's your crowning glory and it's so beautiful. And when you decided to let the colour go from your hair, I read before that you said that was a career move.
It was.
Was it an accidental career move?
It was kind of accidental and partly with a purpose. I had done a role in a movie, Red Roses and Petrol, they had to age me a good 10 years for the role.
Yeah.
I was in my early, I was 43 at the time. They wanted me to be more like 55.
Yes.
So they said, look, we're going to put a sort of a grey colour through your hair, spray it on and so on and so forth for the part. I said, that's grand, do what you like. So we did that. At the end of the movie, I ended up washing out the whole colour thing they'd put in my hair. And out with that came the blonde highlights I had underneath.
Okay.
So when that happened after the movie, my agents were like, please don't put a colour in your hair. Just leave it like that. Let's just do
see
it.
See what happens.
So I thought, OK, I'm just going to do this for my career and let's see what happens. And the funny thing is, I actually liked it.
Yeah.
Because I found when I was getting my hair coloured, I used to look and I think, God, I look better before I went into the salon. Because it's all about the tones of your skin tones change.
Yeah, of course.
And I used to kind of like the little silvery bits because they sort of bring out the light in your eyes.
Yeah.
So anyway, I do remember the first job I did. I was modelling for some company and their stuff was very, you know, the long shapeless dress with the Jesus sandals and all that, which is so not my look. And there I was with the long silver white hair and this dress. And when I saw the photograph, oh my God, I'm like, oh God, I'm 43 and I look 63.
This is just not good. Oh no, you didn't like
it. And I nearly ran to the hair salon, but I thought, Olivia, sleep on it. Just sleep on it. And the next day I thought, it gives you perspective. It's what you were wearing. Somebody else did your makeup. They gave you heavier lipstick than you'd normally wear, which is always aging. And let just look at yourself now. This is what you wear. This is what you look
like. Yeah, you've been
right
styled.
And then
I
was just fine. And I just got over that little burp. And that was fine. But it has been actually very good for my career.
Yeah.
And it got all of a sudden got me indoors that I wouldn't have been going in. And it, you know, commercials as well in particular. Now, I was up against women who are much older than I.
Yeah.
But very often they will pick the girl who, the woman who is younger. But because I have this coloured hair, it sort of translates that I am of a certain age.
Yeah. I still have a million different questions I want to ask you, but I'm not going to because I've kept you long enough. But just before I go, you know, we've spoken a lot about modeling and the confidence that it gave you. And then we spoke about all your different platforms. And inevitably, in all of those places, besides the writing, maybe, or maybe besides the maid work as well, image has been important, undeniably so, for your career. But on a personal level, why... or is style important to you? And if so, why is style or fashion or clothes or grooming, why is that important to you?
I think I just, you know, I'm not necessarily somebody who has to get up and do the whole hairdo and the makeup before I face the world. I'm not like that at all. Mm-hmm. I'm particularly living in LA, it's a very natural place.
Yes.
So you're inclined to just, I run around most of the time with no makeup on.
Yeah.
If I had had a late night and I felt you need a little help, the little bit of tinted moisturiser, the bit of lip gloss and the sunglasses.
Yes.
The brush through the hair. And I'll just slip into a little summer dress or, you know, something with nice bright colours and my flip-flops and off I go and do that. But I look presentable.
Yes, absolutely.
And there's a friend of mine, and unfortunately she passed away this year, and she was a lovely lady. She was 90 when she passed away, Peggy. And she was just the most glamorous woman till the day she died. And I remember going out with her less than 10 years ago. So she was in her 80s. And she showed up at my house. We were going to an event in LA, some awards ceremony thing. She showed up in my house and it was a daytime event and she had white trousers on her, beautiful white silk top, a candy pink jacket, her hair done in Beverly Hills with the do, the jewels and white sunglasses.
Oh, fabulous.
And I'm just like, if I'm like that at 83, I'll be very happy.
Oh, yeah.
She stayed my manager. You know what she said to me? Olivia, she said, I feel like when I get done up and go out, I feel like I'm giving the best of myself to the world.
Oh, sing
it. And you know something? I am like, Peggy, I love that. That is just, I'm going to take that saying because I just love it. I think it's kind of respect for yourself and respect for others.
Yes.
And you often automatically feel better when you make a little effort.
Yes. I could chat to you for another 2 hours.
Likewise,
thank you so much. I really appreciate you doing this.
Oh, I so enjoyed it. It's been a pleasure.
Hopefully we'll see you again before you go back to
LA. I hope
so.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much, Irene.
I mean, you can't but be lifted by that brilliant personality. And in case you're wondering, yes, I did immediately add Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway to the cart. I expect to see myself in LA within a few weeks, and I'm sure Olivia will have me at all the great events in no time. I'm pretty sure she promised that on air, didn't she? I really want to sincerely thank Olivia for taking the time to meet with me and stay 2 hours chatting, which we did. I was so struck by how incredible her memory is when it comes to her clothes, and clearly they played such a big part in her life, and I love that she gets so much joy remembering those special outfits. I mean, I really want to raid her wardrobe. Olivia, you are a gem. I would still be talking to you now if I had my way, so thank you so much. And as always, a massive thank you to you for tuning in to The Gilded Thread. I am still saying tuning in. It means so much that you've chosen to listen to this podcast, and I really do hope that you enjoyed it. Again, please do rate and review on iTunes if you are so inclined, and I look forward to chatting in your ear again next week when my guest is a man, the most dapper of Dublin gentlemen, Louis Copeland. Chat to you then.